All right, let's bring this back. Would any of the tables like to share any of your verses that you came across with the rest of the group? How about we start back here?
I shared Galatians 2:20 and 21. I am crucified with Christ, yet nevertheless I live. Yet not I, but Christ lives in me. For the life that I now live in the flesh, I live by faith in the Son of God, who loved me and gave himself for me. It's very powerful life words.
Yeah.
Middle table. You guys have anything you want to share?
No, we're good.
No. One of the ones that I mentioned was, let me get there, was Romans 8, the whole chapter, but the end, the "For I am sure that neither death nor life, nor angels nor rulers, nor things present nor things to come, nor powers nor height nor depth, or anything else in all creation will be able to separate us from the love of God in Christ Jesus." And just the power of God's love.
It's huge. He had no doubt experienced that. So, back table.
Philippians 4:6-7. "Do not be anxious about anything, but in everything, by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your requests to God, and the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus."
Mike copied that.
Well, this is what I told my table, that you know, you can know a verse, and like there's so many verses that we know, but this took on a new meaning for me when I was diagnosed with cancer 15 years ago, and to really experience that peace that transcends understanding. You know, I told my table that you know you should be freaked out.
Right.
But you're not.
Wow.
Because God has given you his peace, and you know it's not a peace from yourself.
Right.
It is from him, and it's very real. And so to know it is one thing, but then to like really experience it just gave that a whole new thing.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
They already did it. Well, we're Romans 8, or Romans 9, Romans 5 through wherever. I'm not going to read it. Just the fact that I've heard Steve say it from the pulpit, I've heard Terry say it from the pulpit, I've heard what's your name?
Julie.
I may have heard you name. Just the fact that the same spirit is in me that raised Christ from the dead. This amazes me.
Wow.
Makes me feel special.
Yeah. And it should. He really hit on actually a major theme of Acts. And Paul, for that matter. But just resurrection, period. I think it's pretty mind-blowing. For me, I'll share with you mine. Philippians 3. He had a lot to say to Philippians. 3:13-14. "Brothers and sisters, I do not consider myself yet to have taken hold of it. But one thing I do," this is it right here for me, "forgetting what is behind and straining toward what is ahead, I press on toward the goal to win the prize for which God has called me heavenward in Christ Jesus." And for me, that's like the only way we can get anywhere different in life, or get any closer to the Lord, or get deliverance from anything, is if we embrace that truth, that we really can't forget it. We really can, because Paul did it, because he knew Jesus was washing him clean, had washed him clean. And he was no longer defined by the sins of his past. That's got me through many nights. Yeah. That was Philippians 3, verse 13 and 14. Yep. So, okay, we're gonna move along a little bit here in with Paul's life. Okay, appreciate everybody sharing. It's kind of like one of the daunting things about trying to talk about Paul is there's just it's so vast, and it touches on so many different things. So we're gonna stick to a story, and so Paul. Who was originally Saul, named after King Saul, had a pretty strong conversion on his way to a town called Damascus, about 80 miles north of Jerusalem. Yep. You look for the D there, the big D. And I don't know. You know, bright light, gets blinded for 3 days, lost his appetite for 3 days, sat in a house, this nice man named Judas's house for 3 days, and during that his whole world just got turned around. I was trying to imagine what that would be like, you know, how could I even start fathoming what that would be like? And I was like, okay. If I was like on my way to work tomorrow, and there was a bright light, like my wife gets an aura that starts happening, and you know, God's generous, he doesn't want me to die, so he lets me know that everything's gonna go black very quickly, so you better pull over, okay? And I pull over, and sure enough, I do lose my ability to see within probably 5 minutes. It's gone. And there I am, and I hear this voice saying, Nathan, why are you not following me? And I say, who are you? I'm on my way to Carriage Town. I was following you. And he says, I'm Muhammad. I actually am God's final prophet. And I am flabbergasted. Blows me away. I question whether or not I should even bring that, because I don't believe that at all. But I was trying to wrap my head around how drastic this would be for Paul. Okay. And it was, you know, he was going to Damascus to arrest people. He got permission, he got orders to go and arrest people for worshiping this Jesus. And then Jesus confronts him personally. And by the end of his time in Damascus, he is not only that's the thing. I was talking to Katrina. It was almost like when during those 3 days, Paul's sitting there in the house. Quiet house. He's got stillness. Everybody, if you're closing your eyes, right? Scared to death. Mm-hmm. And he realizes that God's not back there in Jerusalem like he thought. He's right here in the people that I've come to arrest. And it was like the missing link, I feel like, for Paul. Like, once that got
reset, like, oh, Jesus is the Messiah. He really is. Only the Messiah could blind me for 3 days. And then
further on, later on in Acts, when he's giving his testimony before authorities and stuff, he actually does talk about that Jesus was speaking with him throughout those 3 days. Okay, it wasn't just him sitting in a room for 3 days with nobody talking to him. Jesus was actually filling him in on what he intended for Paul. So he was very gracious with Paul, and I think it's because of how much he loved him and how much he, and you know, then Ananias, who was the guy across town, the loving brother who was given the job to go and lay hands on Paul so he could receive his sight and give him his commission, since he doesn't want to go, but God says, no, go. This is my mouthpiece to the Gentiles and to the Jews. And so Ananias goes, puts his hands on him. He receives his sight. And then within, by the time he leaves Damascus, he is talking in their synagogues, trying to prove, he is proving and convincing people that Jesus is the Christ, to the point at which, I mean, I'm like, have they not been doing this before? There were believers there. That's why he was even going there. But for some reason, they want to kill Paul. But it's the Jewish authority, so that all makes sense, because the Jews, I mean, he was like their ally. He was like their representative. And now all of a sudden, he's converted, and he's up talking, trying to convince them why Jesus is the Christ. This is all really, really maddening. So they're trying to kill Paul. The very people who he was like representing are now trying to kill him. He gets out through a basket at night, and then heads back to Jerusalem. At Jerusalem, when he gets back there, the believers don't buy it at first. They're really, really scared of Paul because of everything he's done. He was really obsessed with really weeding out Christians. He was causing a lot of distress for the way, for the Christian movement. He was no small character. And I find that interesting, just how obsessed he was. It made me almost think that because we get obsessed about things we're attracted to. I almost wonder if he saw something in these people. But so he goes back, and it takes someone who the apostles in Jerusalem trust to say, okay, we're going to embrace this guy. And does anybody know who that guy was?
Yes.
It was?
Barnabas. You didn't ask who it was. You said, do you really know?
Okay, sorry. He's an engineer. I got to remember that. Barnabas, I think, was just a really, really cool guy, and he was a respected person. He was in the Jerusalem church. He was a guy who sold a piece of property, sold some of his own property early on in the beginning stages of the church, and brought the money and put it at the apostles' feet. He seemed to know God, and to be respected by people, and I mean, to the point where when the apostles in Jerusalem needed to know if a Gentile group in, I believe, Antioch had really received the Spirit or had really come to know God, in order to tell if that was true, to represent them, they sent Barnabas to them, okay? Because he would know, and he's trustworthy. Barnabas was the one that put his arm around Paul first and said, this guy's legit. I know God. I know that he knows God. I know that he has turned a corner, and I know that we can trust him. And because of that, the rest of the church brothers embrace Paul. But it's not long before in Jerusalem, Paul has the Greek Jews want to kill him in Jerusalem, and it's like wherever he goes, there is just like he's fiery. What's the word you use?
Feisty.
He's feisty. Mm-hmm.
And it, things just don't remain the same when Paul's around. So he, and he has a way of stirring up his own persecution. And so they get him out of there. They send him back to his hometown, back to Tarsus. And it's 250 miles back to Tarsus. And he stays there for a while. And it's interesting that at that point, I mean, he had been a real stinger for the church. And the Bible specifically says, when, like, right after he goes to Tarsus, and this is after he's even converted, the church experienced peace and encouragement from the Spirit. And they experienced numerical growth. And the people started just basically living in the fear of the Lord. The church was just growing. Paul is growing in Tarsus. And Barnabas gets this assignment down in Antioch sometime later. And he was like, man, I can't do this on my own. I need some more help here in the teaching and the preaching. I just can't deal with all of it on my own. So Barnabas remembers Paul. And he travels up to Tarsus, looks for him, finds him, and brings him over to Antioch. And Antioch ends up being really Paul's home base for his missionary journeys. The sense that you get is just that the Spirit really just seems to click here. That they build brotherhood there. That they build a community that's trustworthy. That just kind of becomes like home. It's a point that he goes out from and comes back to. More so than any other place. So I just find that interesting. And just encouraging. I like Paul, you know. It was from Antioch that Barnabas and Paul go out on their first missionary journey to spread the gospel. What was the gospel that they were spreading? When they're going in to a town, what is the first thing they're looking for?
Synagogue.
They're looking for a synagogue. What's the synagogue work as?
Gathering place for the Jews.
It's their platform to be able to spread the gospel. But I was just, what is this message that they're bringing in a nutshell?
Jesus is Messiah.
Jesus is Messiah.
And is risen.
That's key. That's one. That is the one piece of it. There's two sides to this coin. That's one side of the coin. What's that?
Fulfillment of the law.
Okay, that would probably go along with that as
it's
well.
The third side of the coin.
Yeah, I would probably dug myself a hole saying it's a two-sided coin. It's a two-sided coin for Nate. All right.
12-sided.
Okay.
So, are you looking for salvation, Nate? Fourth side of the coin.
Yeah. So the other piece. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I think about what I think it was Peter that said it before the Sanhedrin. Salvation is found in no one else, for there is no other name given under heaven by which man can be saved.
Right. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And what is salvation?
Faith in Jesus.
Faith in Jesus. But what is faith in Jesus?
Forgiveness of sins.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, I think it boils down to, we can argue about this. I don't know if I'd argue, I might arm wrestle you over it. They're preaching that Jesus is Messiah, and that he's alive. He was killed, but he's risen. And forgiveness of sins is found in Jesus. That was the heart of their message, I do believe. And it tended to get them a very similar response in in each town, in each synagogue they went to. And this is very interesting to me, too. It's like the same thing. He walks in. Okay, I'm a Pharisee. You should let me talk. Okay, he gets up there, gives his spiel. These are very controversial and new and earth-shattering ideas that he's talking about. He is convinced, trying to convince the Jewish nation that the Messiah has already come, and you may not have even known about it. You probably didn't even know about it. Yeah, right. That's crazy. It's the thought that the Messiah could have come and they missed it. It's just mind-blowing, but he's trying to convince him of this, and some people believe, it's not much different than today, some people believe, a lot of people don't, and then some Jews get angry, and get angry to the point, because, you know, there's a few things, what, you don't talk about, you're not supposed to, you're supposed to really watch talking about politics and about religion. And, you know, when you mess with those things, they can really, and race, okay, and sexuality.
Two sides of that coin.
Yeah, there's two sides of that coin. And he gets, saved out of the situation, or he gets persecuted. He gets imprisoned, or he gets stoned, beaten, something. That's usually the way each of these synagogue encounters goes in the different towns that they go to.